Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, May 30th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. A lawyer representing abducted political activist Itai Dzamara says they've approached the courts to seek an order to compel the police and other security agents to find him.
They have not done all that they are supposed to have been doing. And right now we have applied to the courts to get the state institutions to account for their omission.
Opposition MTC leader Professor Washman Ncube says economic revival will remain a mirage in Zimbabwe as long as ZANU-PF is still in power.
The ruling party as ZANU-PF has over a period of well in excess of 34 years been unable to lead the country to prosperity, save for a few years in the 80s.
And as Zimbabwean is on top of the world after landing a seat in the British local government elections.
What I've learned is this really, when the result is declared, we accept it and we shake hands. We continue to fight to make a difference and just improve people's lives, because essentially politics is about improving people's lives.
A lawyer representing abducted political activist Itai Dzamara of Occupy Africa Unity Square says they've approached the courts to seek an order to compel the police and other security agents to find him. Dzamara disappeared 83 days ago. Charles Kwaramba, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu, the police and Central Intelligence Organization are not doing enough to find Dzamara.
Nothing much has materialized. He has not been found. The police have not done anything. They should have filed two more reports in the last month. They have not done that. In short, they have not done all that they are supposed to have been doing. So we are still at the same stage that we were when we talked last time. And right now we have applied to the courts to get the state institutions to account for their omission.
What else have they not done?
Well, the order of the court had said that they must go throughout the country, look at places where people are kept, where people can be hidden, every possible place that they can look. They must turn every stone. But what is transpired at the moment is that no stone has been turned. You recall that they had been mandated also as well to advertise in the newspapers and radio his whereabouts. But they failed that the one offer that they did on the 13th of March was sufficient. And thereafter, they have not done anything. Yet it's the exact opposite. Before he is found, they cannot stop looking. So that is the problem.
That was Charles Kwaramba, a member of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. There was no official comment from the police and the CIO.
Direct from Washington, the Voice of America, VOA.
Opposition MTC leader Professor Washman Ncube says economic revival will remain a mirage in Zimbabwe as long as ZANU-PF is still in power. Ncube says the ZANU-PF government is populated by clueless people who have no idea on how to turn around the troubled economy. In fact, he says Zimbabwe will be better off without a government. He tells reporter Ntungamene Komo only a change of government will bring relief to Zimbabweans.
The ruling party as ZANU-PF has over a period of well in excess of 34 years been unable to lead the country to prosperity, save for a few years in the 80s. Year after year, we have witnessed the decline of the economy. They actually have no plan. And not only don't they have a plan, they actually have run out of ideas of what to do. Zimbabwe would actually probably be better off without a government at all, and everybody just goes about their life with a vague infinity, because there's a government, when it intervenes, it worsens the situation than making it better. So clearly it doesn't matter what happens, it doesn't matter how they fight elections, it doesn't matter how many times they proclaim victory. They are incapable. They have no capacity to turn around this country back to a road of prosperity.
Essentially, Professor Ngobe, you are saying there is no way the economy can be revived under a ZANU-PF government.
Not only is there no way the economy can improve, but there is no way the decline, the freefall can be stopped or arrested. The sole precondition for the change of trajectory in this country is the removal from power of ZANU-PF one way or the other. As long as they're in power, people can forget that the economy of this country, the politics of this country can ever defeat. We will move from decline to decline, freefall to freefall for as long as ZANU-PF is in power. Their departure from power is a necessary precondition, a sine qua non for the movement of this country in any trajectory which serves the best interests of the people.
That was leader of another MDC party, Professor Washman Ngube, on the line with reporter Ntukameli Komo from Bulawayo. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoi was not available for comment as his mobile phone was not reachable. Tune in on Monday for Ngube's take on prospects of a coalition with the MDCT and other democratic forces ahead of the 2018 general election. As Zimbabwean woman Nicole Ndiweni, who recently won a local government seat under the Labour Party in the British general poll, says she is happy to be the first black councillor in Hucknall Ashfield District Council. Ndiweni was born in Zimbabwe's Karoi town in Mashonaland West Province before moving to Britain for her secondary school studies. She speaks to Studio 7 about her political interests, Zimbabwe and other issues.
I feel more aligned to the Labour Party values because they're, you know, I stand up for what's right and what's just, and I feel that the Labour Party have a long history of fighting against inequality. I really believe in their values of fairness, and I mean that's why I joined the Labour Party and why I represented them. And to be honest, their values also align with Christian values, which works really well for myself because, you know, helping the poor, helping the most vulnerable in your society, and really just standing for what's right. So it really was all together. It came together well for me.
Now, what can Zimbabwe learn from British elections?
Well, having just won an election personally, but the party I represent having lost an election nationally, what I've learned is this really. When the result is declared, we accept it and we shake hands. We continue to fight to make a difference and just improve people's lives because essentially politics is about improving people's lives. So I suppose what we could learn is that, you know, when it's all said and done, the people decide.
Do you see any differences between the British and Zimbabwean elections?
I mean, the system here is really good. And I think there's always room for improvement. We're finding that a lot of people, you know, we had several different issues in our election and so many pros and cons. But what I would say about engaging the voters was, you know, there can always be more done. You know, some people engage because they feel issues that are at the heart of the election involve them. Some people disengage because they feel, you know, politics doesn't work for them anymore. So in terms of electoral process, I would say that, you know, with any electoral process, whether Zimbabwean or in the UK, there's always room for improvement.
What is your message to Zimbabweans in the diaspora and those back home about, you know, being a politician overseas?
My message to them, I suppose, is that, you know, in life you have dreams and aspirations and you should just go for them. In terms of politics, you know, people feel at times that politics doesn't work for them and that, you know, you hear all sorts of things about politics. But what I would say is you should never get tired of doing the right thing. Never get tired of standing up for what's right and standing up for what you believe in. So what I would say to Zimbabweans all over the world is that, you know, if you feel strongly about something and if you're fighting against something, you know, stand up for what you believe in and stand up for what's right and what's just.
Tell us a bit about your family.
My father is a pharmacist by profession, but he's also been a counselor in Karoi. My mother is a nurse in the UK and a midwife as well. So my parents are both forces to be reckoned with. I have a younger brother and sister. My sister actually helped me in the campaign. She was actually hired by the Labour Party later on in the process to work at the campaign office. And my brother is a financial assistant.
That was Nicole Ndiweni, a Zimbabwean who recently won a seat in the Hacknet Council elections in Britain, speaking with Studio 7 from Ashfield, Britain. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. The World Health Organization has identified 17 of them as priorities for action. Some of them can be effectively treated and even eliminated with low-cost medications, in many cases donated by pharmaceutical companies. Getting these medications to where they are needed has been a daunting task, since these are diseases of the poorest of the poor. Their impact on individuals and communities can be devastating. NTDs impair intellectual development in children and reduce school enrollment. They limit the ability of infected individuals to work and thrive, thus trapping them in a cycle of poverty and disease. Today, over 1 billion people suffer from at least one NTD. In 2006, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, started a program addressing the seven diseases that comprise 80% of all NTDs: lymphatic filariasis, blinding trachoma, onchocerciasis, schistosomiasis, and the three most common infections, the soil-transmitted parasites hookworm, roundworm, and whipworm. Back then, the program had a budget of $15 million to distribute 36 million treatments to 16 million people in four countries, said USAID Assistant Administrator Ariel Pablos Mendez. Today, it's $100 million and 240 million treatments distributed to 115 million people in 31 countries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Now it's time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Today we have the pleasure of speaking to Miss Gladys Senderai, an in-studio guest who is a lawyer by profession but has been advancing her studies here in the United States, where she was doing her master's in Ohio. Ms. Senderai will take us through her journey towards coming to the United States to furthering her studies and what she plans to do when she heads back home to Zimbabwe. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Ms. Senderai.
Thank you for having me. So I was based in Ohio for the past 10 months at Ohio Northern University. I studied an LLM in Democratic Governance and Rule of Law. It's a specialized program that focuses on building stable democracies and transitioning countries. And I had a good year. I enjoyed it and I've learned a lot.
You were studying democratic studies. How important is that, especially for Zimbabwe, which has been accused by the United States of not having a democratic government?
I think it's very important because, I mean, just beyond the democratic side of things, the program also focused on rule of law. And I think rule of law is important in any system, no matter how advanced or not advanced they are democratically. And I think once we are able to protect and improve and enhance the rule of law in Zimbabwe, then I definitely think we'll be able to move forward.
Are you going back to where you were working before? And do you think they will be open to you trying some of the ideas that you learned here in the United States?
Yes, my intention is to go back to work in Zimbabwe, and I think, yes, there will definitely be opportunities to try and implement the lessons that I've learned. And it's a whole broad area. We had courses in comparative constitutional law, which is very important in terms of Zimbabwe because we've got a constitution that's still quite new, and issues of compliance and implementation are important. We also studied comparative administrative law and administrative law reform across the spectrum. It's very important. We also had a course in corruption and competitiveness, and I basically learned that the less corruption that there is in a system, the more competitive they are. And I really believe that in Zimbabwe, if we can sort of reduce or start to fight corruption on a larger scale, we can definitely become more competitive and as a result improve our economy.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Gladys to a woman listening out there who might say, can I do what Gladys has done? Tell us your story.
I'm not sure exactly where to start, but I'm 28 years old. I grew up in Zimbabwe. I was born in Kwekwe, and that's where my parents are based. I studied at Goldridge Primary School. Then I went to Chizipiti Senior School in Harare. I got my LLB from the University of Zimbabwe. Then I studied another degree with UNISA, and I worked most of the time that I was in university to sort of supplement my college fees. And I love the law. I'm passionate about the law. In addition to wanting to see justice, I'm passionate about seeing change. And I really believe that the law can change situations. And that's why I decided to study law.
And what word of advice would you have for somebody listening out there, or even any other woman listening out there who'd also like to change their life and focus on a career?
I think the most important thing is to believe in yourself. And once you've decided that you want to do something, don't give up, no matter how difficult it is. I mean, my journey to become a master's graduate was not easy. There were so many times that I tried and I applied and things didn't work out as I had planned, but eventually things did work out. And one thing I can definitely look back and say now is that I don't regret not having given up. I'm glad that I was persistent and I kept on trying. So believe in yourself and don't give up. The sky is the limit.
To round off, you are here at a time when the Constitutional Court has just ruled that women cannot be arrested if there is no proof that they have been conducting prostitution or commercial sex work. What's your take on this ruling?
I think it's very progressive. I mean, I've been a victim of being arrested by the police. I was standing outside my flat in the avenues waiting for a friend to pick me up, and the police came and arrested me. And the argument was that I was soliciting for purposes of prostitution. And I think the fact that if the police cannot prove that to whom you were soliciting these services to and in what manner or identify the conduct, and if the witnesses cannot conclude that you were indeed soliciting for prostitution, then they have no right to arrest you. And I think that's very progressive, especially in areas where women have to walk alone at night. Walking alone at night does not mean you're soliciting for prostitution. Standing on this corner of the street at night does not necessarily mean you're soliciting for prostitution. So I think it's very progressive. And beyond protecting human rights, it protects women. And I think that's very important.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much for having been on our program, Ms. Gladys Senderai, who is a lawyer by profession but was in the United States doing a master's program in Ohio.
You're most welcome.
I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
And finally, in sports news, the Zimbabwe Paralympic Committee President Michael Bulakango says his organization has selected 8 disabled athletes from different provinces to participate at the Africa Games in Brazzaville, Congo, in September. Bulakango tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye that although they have already started preparations for the event, they need some money to participate in the games.
We've lined up some training camps. At least they must get into camp twice a month, knowing that we are now almost towards the African Games in Congo Brazzaville. So we are taking every advantage of any training camp that comes our way, including training camps that are organized by mainstream athletics. We make sure our athletes also have an opportunity to go and train so that we keep them fit and we keep them well-shaped for the tournament.
In what disciplines are you hoping your athletes will compete, and how many have you selected so far?
We have selected 8 athletes, and they are going to be competing in 100 meters, 200, 400, 800, and 1,500. And these athletes comprise those with visual impairments and amputees.
What would you say are some of the challenges that you are facing as the Paralympic Committee in trying to reach some of the targets that you've set for yourselves this year?
Financial resources have remained low, and as a result are hampering our intentions.
That was Michael Bulakango, Zimbabwe Paralympic Committee President, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. The music of Makwapeni and Quality Sounds coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Now to recap today's top stories. A lawyer representing abducted political activist Itai Dzamara says they have approached the court to seek an order to compel the police and other security agents to find him. Opposition MTC leader Professor Washman Ncube says economic revival will remain a mirage in Zimbabwe as long as ZANU-PF is still in power. And the Zimbabwean is on top of the world after landing a seat in the British local government elections. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C. Wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.